Welcome to part two of our conversation with Thomas Edward about what do the dead want? So, yeah, so you respect their opinion of, no, I want to hang out with the silverware, if that's what they're wanting to do. Now, does that come from a place of, and I totally understand, okay, that's your viewpoint, and I understand. But is there also part of that where do you feel that maybe you're not the right person to help them move on? Maybe there's others who are more sensitive, more qualified, more in that area of sensitivity where they can have more of the one-on-one communication that you may not be able to pick up on just because you don't have that ability, where you could get a better sense of what they're wanting to do, where someone else could make that happen for them?
Oh, 100%. I definitely know I am not qualified to do that. I have some sensitive abilities myself, but I don't think I have enough.
Sure.
So if there is a spirit that we come across that possibly does want to move on, we will usually call in a friend or two of ours, a couple mediums that we know that can come in and help us. They're a lot more equipped and a lot better to handle moving someone on. The cat in our group is also somewhat of a medium, so she usually can help as well if it's nothing that's too dramatic like that.
Sure.
So yeah, I know myself, I can, other than like cleansing with sage and things like that, that's where my expertise lies in, you know.
Sure.
I can cleanse everybody, but when it comes to moving someone on, I definitely want to call in someone who can communicate more clearly with the deceased as like a medium and things like that.
And that's an important thing, I think. I think knowing your limitations and knowing and accepting those and understanding your abilities. A lot of people, I'm sure you would probably agree, especially when they're new to this world, they'll jump in thinking they're going to be Superman and they can do anything and everything sometimes that they saw on TV or anything involving the world of the paranormal. Suddenly they're Ed Warren and they're a self-proclaimed demonologist, but they have no experience. And you hear about it all the time. What was that journey like for you, understanding your role, your strengths, what you're able to do, what you're able to help with, and what your limitations are? Were there times as you've grown in this over the last 10 years where you really, you know, there were some lessons to be learned and you got a better understanding of your strengths and your limitations?
Definitely. When I was younger, I was that Superman, you know. I was like, I can go into these places, I can help everybody, I can do all this, I can do all that, I can get the answers I need, you know, to tell everybody this is what's happening in the world. You know, and as you go on, you get humble really quickly, because you learn that you cannot help every single person and you cannot help every single spirit that has been, you know, passed on. And like I said, sometimes they don't want the help. So that was, I mean, it was humbling real quick. And that's when I think I really started to grow, was when I was like, well, I can't do all of this and to help this one spirit. You know, I need to rethink how I'm going to approach things and maybe focus a lot more on researching as to why they're still here, you know? So it was a journey. And sometimes it was very emotional. I do have, as part of my sensitive abilities I have is I'm part empathic as well. So that kind of threw things for a loop too when I started to learn that part. You know, I'd be in a location and I would randomly start crying and I couldn't figure out why. Mm-hmm. Until I realized or got information, oh, this spirit went through a traumatic, you know, something traumatic in life, and now I'm picking up on that, so I'm feeling it. So it was a journey, and a lot of it was to accept that I can't help everybody, and I'm still learning. I'm always learning, and there's never a right or wrong way to do things. And that was a good thing to learn as well. And I don't have all the answers, and I probably never will, to be honest. I don't think anybody's going to have the answers anytime soon. You know, being a paranormal investigator, it's an unproven field. There's nothing, you know, scientifically concrete in this. We're just kind of learning as we go. Are there people that have done this longer than me? 100%. And I like to follow those people because they sometimes give me fresh new ideas on how to, you know, go about things and just a new perspective. So
sure. And that's what it's all about. I hate the word expert being thrown around in this, where it's like no one's an expert. There's some that have been more informed. There's some that have more stories to share and more, you know, experiences that they can relate to other things. And then that can help connect some dots. But at the end of the day, no one is an expert in this. I'm sure you know, having been doing this for a while, you get told that, oh, you must be an expert. I hear it all the time, too. And it's like, no one is an expert. I've heard a lot of stories, so I can probably relate one to something you're going to talk to me about. But I cannot tell you anything more than that, other than just my theories.
I'm the first one to say I'm no expert in anything.
And that's good, because being humble in this world is important. When someone comes to you to share with you that they are having an experience, how do you, what is your method there to determine if it is something that, number one, it's valid? I mean, because obviously we're talking about supernatural things. Mm-hmm. What process do you go through to determine this is something that we should be looking into further? And walk me through that a little bit.
Definitely. So we actually have I don't have it next to me. I wish I would have, but we actually have a booklet with a whole bunch of questions we'll ask mm-hmm. people. And usually it involves, you know, simple questions like, you know, how often does this event or occurrence happen? Mm-hmm. Has anybody else in your house witnessed it besides you? We'll ask, you know, we'll try to get some basic information also as, you know, if they have any idea when the house was built or, you know, if they know of anybody that had passed away in the house. I mean, these are simple things we look up after the fact as well. Just by doing property records and things like that and going through microfilm,
sure.
You know, old newspapers and all that. So it's usually basic questions like that just to get an idea if they're being genuine with us. Because we have unfortunately been on, you know, interviews with potential clients who we can tell are just lying, to put it simply.
Sure.
So I generally like if they generally feel like they are very worried about what's going on, it's usually a good indicator to me, at least, that they're most likely telling the truth, that they are in fact witnessing something that they can't explain. Mm-hmm. But you know, we'll still go through and ask things like, you know, do you have any issues with the power in the house? You know, because high EMF can be a trigger for, you know, feelings of dread, hallucinations and things like that if you're overly sensitive to it.
Sure.
So we, you know, we'll go through that. And that is actually also one of the things we do when we go into a house, is we will investigate all the lines and electrical boxes in the house, usually with EMF meters, just so we can see how high the readings are coming off of it, mm-hmm. Especially in the floorboards and things like that, where main people walk through. Because it is, if you don't know you're sensitive to it, you could be having all these feelings and you just don't know it. You might think, oh, it's paranormal, but really you're just overly sensitive to all that EMF that's being pumped through the air. I've tested that too with some people by using EM pumps mm-hmm. in small spaces with them, just to see. It's been like a little experiment that I've done, just not to get too off topic, but we just stick the EM pump in this, like a small closet with them, and see how they feel after like 10 minutes of sitting in there with it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we'll get people that come out and be like, oh, wow, I was hallucinating and things like that. You can tell, oh, you're sensitive to EMF.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's simple things like that. I usually really look more for like the tone in their voice and like the eye contact, to see, because that's usually how I, you know, kind of, I don't want to say judge people, but like, that's how I get my,
you're qualifying my them. You're qualifying them as to whether or not it should be investigated. What's interesting to me, and what I'm wondering about is, and something that I was pleasantly surprised by, my pessimism was not correct when it usually is the sheer amount of people that we have that write into our shows, whether it be this one or Real Ghost Stories Online, and the calls that we get. I would say a super high percentage are very authentic. This is things people believe are happening to them. It is rare, honestly, that I get someone where I go, they're lying. You know, they're really trying to make this thing up. And it's either usually a child that's, you know, being a kid, or it's someone trying to sell a book. it's one of the two. And it's rare that it's just like some random person who thought, I'm going to really tell a tall tale today. So what is it like? What is the profile of the individual that would take the time to come to an investigator and lie about a haunting to get you to go to their home? Why would someone do that when you say you've come across that before? What type of person are we talking about here that is doing that? And what is their goal, I guess, would be my question.
I wish I could say in the end what their goal would be, because I honestly don't know. But it's only happened, I will preface by saying, it's only happened one time.
Okay.
But it was so like, you know, he contacted us to go to his house. He wanted us to come. Well, one, first, he wanted us to come right to his house without meeting in a public place first. That was red flag number one.
So it's a serial killer.
Yeah, I'm like, no. I was like, I definitely don't feel comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Let's meet, you know, first. So he did end up showing up to the location, which was just a coffee shop between both of our places where we live. And like the whole time, it seemed very off. Just something about his demeanor seemed really off. And like he kept like looking around, like not at us at all. And you know, we were asking him about his house, and we're like, okay, do you know when the house was built? He's like, yeah, I just had it built like 2 years ago. I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm not gonna discount that the land could possibly be having some stuff going on, but it was like a brand new development. And I'm like, that seems really interesting if you're having experiences in a brand new house. Not to say you're not, but that it's interesting. And then he said something about like how he sees someone sitting in his truck every day. And I'm like, okay. I was like, so do you want us to investigate your truck or the house?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, you just get that vibe.
That there's something like, off. Yeah.
They're like, this just doesn't feel right. So, you know, at the end of it, we said, you know, all right, we'll go back. We'll read through everything you told us, you know, after we asked, you know, a bunch of questions. I was like, and we'll get in contact with you again if we feel like we want to move forward and come check this out for you. And he was like, well, why can't you come right now? And I'm like, because the first reason is it's, you know, middle of the day, you know, we all still have our own jobs and things like that. Secondly, I need to go over everything and take a look into the actual property before we come out, because that's one thing I like to do before I actually go to someone's location is, you know, go over the property records and everything. So I have an idea of what possibly happened at certain points in time before I go to the location. One of the things we can usually try also when we go through the records is getting names of old people that live there. So that way we can see if maybe it's that person who had lived there previously who may be still there. So he was like, okay. So we left, and then a few days later, just to see if maybe he was, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt, I'll say. I reached out to him and, you know, messaged him and never heard a word back. To this day, still never heard a word back. So
it makes you wonder. I mean, you could be dealing someone with simply just a mental disorder of some sort. Or you could be dealing with someone that, you know, really wanted you to get back to their house and then they could have you for dinner. it could go either way. You're not really sure. I do another show called Dark Side of Wikipedia, so we're always talking about serial killers. And so it's
a second fascination of mine.
Scary to death to hear about what people are capable of. Another thing that I'd like to ask you about kind of probably here as we're starting to get close to the end. Tell me about some of the most compelling experiences that you've run into, Thomas, while investigating over the last 10 years. What are some of your greatest hits, if you will, where someone were to say, what were some of the moments where you went, wow, this, you know, this really shows me, yeah, I obviously you already believe in this, but, you know, just solidifies that even more.
One of the first one that sticks out to me that I'll always remember was, this was only a few years ago. Probably like 4 years ago now. I was at the Hinsdale House, which a lot of people know about.
Sure.
Pretty well-known location. And I was there with a few friends of mine because they wanted to check it out. And I spent a lot of time there. So I brought them, and I was sitting on the couch. And if anyone knows the layout, the couch near the one to the left side. So my friend was standing in front of me while I was sitting down, and I saw a woman in a white dress with long blonde hair walk behind him. As she walked behind him, she looked directly at me, and her eyes were pitch black. Then she walked behind him, and then she was just absolutely gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't the only one who saw her. My other friend, it was Kat at the time, I'll say it was Kat. So she saw her while she was sitting on the other side of the couch. She only caught the back of her, though. So I had the full glimpse of this woman in a white gown. It was either a gown or a dress. It looked pretty old. She had long blonde hair. And then her eyes were just, I think the eyes stood out the most because they were just like black holes. It was very odd.
Something like that, where it's projecting itself to you in a very terrifying way. I mean, this is not just woman in white dress who looks normal. Black holes for eyes.
Yeah.
Does that translate then into, okay, this is a ghost who has really no control over their perceived the way they present themselves to the living? Or is that something that's a key portion of them that they're choosing to project that way to incite horror in whoever is seeing it? What was your feeling on at that moment when you saw that woman with the black holes for eyes?
So my feelings at that moment were that she was definitely like showing them to me on purpose because she looked right at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely felt like she did it on purpose. And mainly, you know, after that experience happened, I also went back and I started talking to Dan, who's the owner. And I just asked him generally, you know, has anyone else told you anything like this before? Like the black eyes, because that, like I said, stood out the most. And he was like, not really. He's like, most people say they see the woman in a white dress and blonde hair, but they see a normal face.
Mm-hmm.
So that got me thinking, and I'm like, why would she show me black eyes? You know, and to this day, I can't really figure out why. Subsequently, I've been back to the house a lot because I help Dan out at the house, and I volunteer there.
Sure.
I haven't seen her again since. So I honestly don't have a reason why she would show me her face like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think it was on purpose.
Do you think, I mean, on purpose to scare?
I don't think so much as to scare, because I never felt like I was frightened at all. And I never got the feeling like I should be scared. I don't know if maybe she was trying to say like this, something happened to me with my eyes, like, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, maybe, you know, there's a lot of stories on the location itself. Especially one of the stories being that, there were two brothers that were murdering people and hiding them in the basement. So could that have been, maybe they did something to her eyes and that's what she's trying to project to me, if she was a victim of theirs, if it is a true story.
Sure.
I mean, that could be, but I definitely was never scared of it. And it, and especially at the time, it just felt like she did it for a reason.
Yeah. Where maybe we just interpret it as scary because it, it looks scary to us, but it's more so there's a message behind it than there is an intent to frighten.
That could be.
Yeah.
100%.
What's another experience that you've had over the last 10 years that, that has either really stood out to you, or have you ever had a moment, let me ask you this, have you ever had a moment over the last 10 years of investigating that made you go, maybe I should find another hobby, like collecting silverware?
Better go to Macy's now.
Yeah.
Let's see. I've had, I don't know if I've ever had to the point where I said I needed to rethink what I'm doing. I think I'm lucky in the fact that it takes a lot to actually like scare me.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, we do, when we go to locations now, we'll send each of us into a location solo for a bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've never been frightened of that because it's just always been in my head that at some point these were people and they just want to talk, whether they're grumpy now or, you know, grumpy later. Some of them, you know, they are grumpy. But I will say that one of the, let me flip it around and say one of the best experiences I had that made me want to chase even more,
mm-hmm.
Was that we were at West Virginia Penitentiary in Moundsville, Ohio, mm-hmm. or Virginia, Ohio, Virginia, it's right on the border. Forget which one they consider it. And we were up on the second floor in the infirmary, which is, you know, where the prisoners went if they were sick. And we're walking down this one hallway and we hear a conversation going on between a man and a woman. Now, at the time, we were with a group of 14 people. We had all, you know, joined together to go there to split up the costs and everything. So our first assumption is we're going to find another group at the end of the hall speaking to each other and just being loud.
Sure.
So we head that way because we're like, let's go meet up with them. We get to the end of the hallway where there's a stairwell and there's no one there. So we're sitting there going, okay, maybe they went down these stairs. So we you know, approach the stairs and we hear the conversation again. Now, the interesting thing about the conversation is we couldn't make out what they were saying, only that we could hear distinctly a man and a woman, but it sounded kind of garbled.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, me and a friend at the time, we took off down the stairs. We're like, it's got to be another group. I want to make sure. So we go down there and there's nobody on the first floor and it was pitch black and there was no lights on or anything. So we had a walkie talkie on us and we radioed over to the other members. We said, is anyone in on the first floor below the infirmary right now? And they said, no, we're all in the main lobby. And we're like, oh, okay. We're hearing an entire conversation between a man and a woman.
Yeah.
Just basically in, you know, thin air. Definitely was not anybody in the group, as you know, because we definitely verified that. And it was one of the things that said, like, oh, I want to keep doing this and I want to stay. Well, I wanted to stay even longer, but our time was up. But because I wanted, you know, how was it that they were able to have an entire conversation out of thin air, essentially, to the point that we could hear it.
See, keeps you searching for more answers to the questions, and then at the end of the day there just ends up being far more questions than answers.
Usually.
That wraps up the second half of our conversation with Thomas Edward about what do the dead want. A big thank you to him for sharing his experiences with us on the program today. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for the support and thanks for listening.